Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, special teams, special players on this podcast. What's up, brothers? We're off
What's
and running.
going on?
We've brought a special guest on this week to talk all things wrestling. Anybody's got an inside scoop on different things is a former pro wrestler himself, Knuckles Nelson. Knuckles, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I don't know how much of an inside scoop I have, but I definitely have an opinion.
I love it. That's what we're looking for.
I love it.
We're looking to pop the ratings. That's what we're looking for. Hot shot the territory. That's what we're trying to do. So, with that being said, Ed, what do you got for us? Good email this week. Wrestling based, sponsored by Hit It.
It is sponsored by goonguard.com. Check it out. I finally got it out of the box. So here we go. It's about WrestleMania. This is from Darren from Mount Dora, Florida. Hey guys, being wrestling fans and dedicating last episode to your picks, what has been your favorite WrestleMania of all time?
So, what do you think, Ed? We'll start with you. We never start with you. We'll start with you.
I'm gonna go WrestleMania 3, and not because of the Andre the Giant Hulk Hogan the first time that the Giant got slammed. I'm gonna have to say the Macho Man versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in that match. In my opinion, it outshined that match between Hogan and Andre. So I'd have to say number three. It was the largest one that they had. It was like what 94,000 people that they had at the Silver Dome.
Inflated.
Well, you know. That was my pick, so I'm gonna kick it out to you guys.
Let's go, Chris. Chris, take it away. Your favorite WrestleMania.
Right, I'm gonna take you back to March 29th, 1998. All right, I was 11 years old. My parents would not order a pay-per-view, of course, so I was watching it with that green scramble that, when the channels you couldn't get. And that's WrestleMania 14 right here in Boston at the Fleet Center. That's when my peak wrestling time was. Stone Cold catching Shawn Michaels super kick, spinning around, giving him the stunner for the to win the championship. Also, Mike Tyson was part of it, which was huge. It was just classic. That's what got me loving wrestling to this day. So,
I'm going to shoot to Knuckles. Knuckles, I'm on the edge of my seat. What's your pick?
well, mine is the same as he just talked about in Boston, because that night a bunch of the regional local wrestlers were involved in WrestleMania. I was actually on WrestleMania. I was a druid for The Undertaker with a bunch of other local NWA wrestlers. And that in itself was great. But I was in the back when Pete Rose got the Tombstone Piledriver from Kane. And when he came back on a stretcher through the curtain, he got off the stretcher and he looked at me and he said, "How was that?" And I said, "Fucking awesome." And I was standing there with Mike Tyson, Pete Rose, and myself, and it really doesn't get much better than that.
Good Lord,
That
that's a
trumps your
who's who,
story, Chris.
right?
I guess I think Knuckles beat you, man. I mean, being a druid for the Undertaker and watching it on Crinkle's green screen.
Well, all I can say is when we were holding those big torches, the Undertaker was walking under us saying, "Don't burn my hair, don't burn my hair."
Oh shit.
I wasn't trying to one up him. I'm just glad that we both like the same WrestleMania.
Oh,
Oh, damn.
very cool. Bradford, what do you got?
How am I supposed to follow that,
That's why I went through it to you and not me.
right, look. I still got it on DVD, WrestleMania 20. I bought this in Iraq. This was like or your only form of entertainment. You had to have a couple of DVDs and a little battery powered flip up portable DVD player. That's how you got through your deployments, you know? But WrestleMania 20, the Rock and Sock Connection. It had a Playboy evening gown match, Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar with Stone Cold as the guest ref. Just tons of like classic Attitude Era matches. I mean, it was incredible. So that used to be my favorite. I mean, this DVD is wore out from, all the, good use. But I gotta say, this past one, just getting to watch it with Lucas and how like invested he was into it, like wrestling is changed forever when you got a kid who is just into it as much as you are. I'm having like adult conversations with Lucas about the wrestlers, the storylines. you know, he knows all the finishers. He knows every walkout. This dude came up to me the other day and punked me. And he was like, hey, dad, do you remember blase blah match when blase blah happened? I was like, bro, I don't know what the, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. You know, he's like, you don't remember when Brock Lesnar tore his pants wrestling like Cody Rhodes? I was like, holy shit. No. How do you remember that? You know, it happened last year or whatever. So this past one, getting to share that experience with Lucas, absolutely incredible. Hands down, WrestleMania 40 will go down in history for me as one of the best.
Thomas, let's hit it.
There's a lot here. There's a few different ones that I really like, but I'm going to go with WrestleMania 30 because I was a huge Daniel Bryan fan, especially when he was in WWE, and it was when he ended up fighting the two matches, and he ended up winning the belt at the end. Easily the best. But I will say WrestleMania 17 was another one that I loved. Just like the card wise, I thought that was one of the better cards with Stone Cold and The Rock, Undertaker beating Triple H. And then I think it was the second tables, ladders, and chairs match with Edge and Christian and the Hardys and the Dudleys. Mm. That was an awesome match as well. And then, of course, Angle and Benoit was one of the best matches that they've had at WrestleMania. So, but I'm going with Daniel Bryan, WrestleMania 30.
So my pick, I'm going to hop on the bandwagon with Brad, kind of reverse. The first WrestleMania was huge for me. It wasn't on pay-per-view yet. It was closed circuit TV. I went to Providence Civic Center to see it with my father. And there was a whole culmination buildup of that with the Water Settled the Score the summer before that, the whole MTV thing that they were trying to do, that whole buildup of 85 with Cyndi Lauper and Mr. T and that whole huge pop culture blend that they brought in. Was it was there was so much hype around that. And that first WrestleMania scene at the Civic Center in closed circuit, I'll probably, for all the things that I forget and all the other WrestleManias that I've watched, that's the one that I probably say has the most weight to it. It's the first one. It brought everything together and, you know, family-friendly stuff. And that's my memory. But WrestleMania 1 is probably my favorite. So
I was there, too. I was in the Civic Center that day, too.
See? I remember the first one that I could get on pay-per-view was WrestleMania 3. The first one I saw at Providence Civic Center and the second one I saw on closed circuit at New Bedford High School. And wow. Ryan Branco was there too. So fun fact, deep dive. There's just a big thing over the 40 years of WrestleMania, how much it's changed. And I do not think that the 40th WrestleMania was the best one. I think there's been other ones. The card I thought was a little lacking. And with that being said, let's start talking WrestleMania 40.
Let's not get only, into it.
Yeah, let's. There you go. So, quick thoughts, Chris. Did you see any of it? What'd you think?
I didn't get to watch it, unfortunately. No. I'm just happy that my guy, which I called it somewhat, Damian Priest was cashing in that Money in the Bank and winning some title. So I'm glad it was against Drew McIntyre too. So that was cool. That was probably my favorite take from the whole WrestleMania. Loved it.
Knuckles, so we're going to talk to you. Thoughts on this year's WrestleMania, top to bottom. What'd you think of it? Did you put it in the top half of the top 20 or the lower 20 of the WrestleManias?
Oh, big, huge, gigantic thumbs up. It was fantastic. I think Gunther and Sami Zayn totally caught me off guard. That was such an emotional match. I love when I'm emotionally invested in a wrestling match. And the main event, obviously, I felt that way. Rhea Ripley's match was incredible. She's just on her own level right now. I have to admit, a lot of the mid, as you just said, a lot of the mid-card stuff, I wasn't really overly like into. Some of the guys, I'm just not emotionally invested. But the other thing, the other ones that I just mentioned were great. And I'm sure we'll talk about this later because I know there's a lot of guys here that want to speak. The whole idea that Triple H is in the position that he's in because he married the boss's daughter is complete bullshit. Triple H is a wrestler. He went to Killer Kowalski's wrestling school. I was in that school with him. Mm. Triple H belongs where he is. He has taken the WWE like it was a cell phone with no battery power left in it and plugged it in and boom, it comes back to life. It is so good right now. And as an old timer, as an old school guy like me, it's hard to get us to pop for anything. And what he's done is change wrestling. I don't know what this era is called yet, but it's phenomenal. The best is yet to come, I think.
We've talked about a bunch of different things, like theories going into this, and we'll be all over the place with this, but we'll stay with the WWE theme. I think that the whole psychology behind it needs to change as far as what you build storylines off of, that the world title should always be like the Stanley Cup or the Lombardi Trophy, and everybody is trying their hardest to win matches to get to that point to win everything. That being said, you build off of, that's my thoughts. You always build off the world title as being the end all be all of why you are in that sport. And I wish that they would get more sports based, like how the UFC is. There's no Batistas in the UFC. It's Dave Batista. They need to get away from the share type gimmick. It should be both names, Cody Rhodes, Dave Batista, not just Batista, and, you know, Rhea Ripley. It needs to go back to, like, you're watching something that suspends your belief of, could this be actually real? They need to get back to that fine line of not over-the-top hardcore matches and cheap pops and things like that, where you're really invested in the storyline long-term, like the Bloodline was. Bring people back in the fold where they're really, really kids and old-school wrestling fans want to come back and watch it. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, Knuckles?
Yeah, I think there's still room for a one-name wrestler from time to time, but I like what you're saying about making it more like a sport, and I think it's heading in that direction. It sure feels like it. I really can't think of anything negative to say about the direction that WWE is going in. They're packing every arena they go to. It's exciting. It's so much fun to watch, and like I said earlier, emotionally invested is the only thing that's going to get me. And I was watching that main event with all the old timers coming down to the ring, and the way it all went down, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, the whole Sami Zayn Gunther match was almost like Rocky-esque. They were in Philly. Mm-hmm. They tried to do the Rocky style, to the ring. His wife was like Adrian. And, there was kind of that Apollo Creed with Owens kind of thing, like kind of pumping his tires saying, Chad Gable saying, you owe me one, like Apollo at the end of Rocky III, where he had to have that match, that little sparring match with him at the end. So there was a lot of Easter eggs in there, as you can say, for fans that were kind of, in tune, dialed in for little things. So I want to ask, like, Tom, what would the WWE have to do to get you back on full time watching it every week, emotionally invested?
This right here, they're doing a good job of it right now. I love the storyline right now with the Bloodline, and now this past week adding Tonga, the guy, what's the name, to the thing, and it seems like the split is going to happen, and they're going to have Bloodline versus Bloodline. I just love how they've. It used to seem like Vince McMahon, when they'd start try to do a long-term thing, he'd get bored, and suddenly it would change at the last second, and it's change on a dime. At least I love how they're booking everything right now. And it goes all the way down to like NXT. Shawn Michaels is doing a great job there. It's just like, and they've built up, each show is just phenomenal. I'm right now, I'm not watching full episodes, but I'm back on the train.
Chris, thoughts on like being a full-time wrestling fan before versus now, like, we were talking about how we were so invested in AEW when it first started and how it tailed off. What are your thoughts on why you lost interest in that aspect of it? Just because maybe we didn't touch on it full time, or so that Knuckles could hear exactly what you're talking about.
I mean, losing interest in AEW, you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. And how, there was this big, like, it was like this little thing of all these guys that maybe never got a shot in WWE. And now you know why they never got a shot. And then hope that they would bring in some maybe old school storytelling and that the WWE wasn't kind of doing at the time, and maybe steal some stars, which they kind of did, but they didn't do anything with them. It's like that Mercedes Moné it's like she's irrelevant, and they're paying her, I heard, $10 million a year to go there. So who wouldn't take that money to do absolutely nothing? But go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, no, I mean, I jumped on the AEW bandwagon just because it reminded me of the Attitude Era, right? It was just, you know, it was rough, tough. They were throwing swears here and there. It was, you know, PG-13 or whatever you want to call it. It just more of like attracted the adults. Same thing with the Attitude Era. I felt like there was so many. You remember seeing those stands just full of people, you know, guys with no shirts on with letters across their bodies. It was just totally exciting to watch it. Now I feel like WWE's kind of starting to come back with that. You know, like I've been more and more excited about watching. I record every Raw episode. Eventually I get to it. I'm a little backed up, but like I would say that I'm partially full-time back on wrestling, and I'm loving what WWE is doing right now.
Ed, you want to piggyback on something that we've talked about a couple of different times so Knuckles can hear it, about how when AEW started, I told you, let's watch it together on Wednesdays. This was before the podcast. Let's make that connection on Wednesdays to text back and forth and watch stuff and tell me why you lost interest. So I wouldn't say 100% interest, but just explain why.
Well, I think that the biggest thing, the biggest draw to me, you and I, we both started watching wrestling pretty much together in the seventh grade. And you and I both, you kind of pulled me away from that WWF, now WWE kind of, and I really kind of fell in love with the storytelling that the NWA, WCW had, you know, TBS studio, that type of thing. So when I first started watching, when you hit me up, you're like, look, man, you got to check this out. This is like old school TBS stuff. And the storytelling was good, everything like that. And it seemed like that there was like a nice slow build that you could really kind of get emotionally invested in the characters that these guys were portraying. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed like now we're pulling out, you know, tables and chairs every single week. We're going to bring the fire out. Hey, look, we're going to put a cage match on regular TV. And like all of a sudden, it just seemed like it was one of those things where it's like, God, that's supposed to be the ending of the story, not like the middle of the story, the little vignettes and stuff like that. Those are supposed to build to the ending of the story. It's not supposed to have like two vignettes, 2 weeks, and all of a sudden now we're going to do a cage match on regular TV on a Wednesday night. That means nothing. And all of a sudden you could just like the talent just, it kind of started eroding. And like some of these matches, like what's his face? The little tiny dude that looks like that was hanging on Sting all the time.
Darby Allin.
I mean, that dude's going to get paralyzed. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's going to get paralyzed. Like, I mean, like it's just like, and so it's one of those things where like he's doing that stuff every single Wednesday night. And so it desensitizes you as a viewer that it doesn't mean anything. And that was my biggest problem. I just started losing interest, and all of a sudden, like all these stars started kind of going away. And the question was why, and the storytelling just got crappy. Well, that's why I went away from it.
Yeah, and I'm going to show it to Knuckles in a minute. But Cody Rhodes leaving. I've said this before on the podcast. Here's the guy that out of the initial EVPs was the only guy that had been to the big time, the only guy that had big time experience. The other guys didn't. And you see when he leaves and goes back, how they don't want the other guys and what's left with the other guys in charge. It's like it'll never get away from being an indie-looking promotion because they don't know how to get guys over. They don't know how to – without car crashes and hot shot and stuff. I love – the only thing that I still love about AEW is they get the blade out. And it tells it – but it's too much. It's supposed to be like, I thought there was going to be blood at WrestleMania. There wasn't. I thought Cody was going to bleed. I was hoping he was going to do the Ric Flair Dusty at the end where he was all busted up and whatever, but it didn't happen. But my point being is AEW is losing ground. They had just come up to our area. I don't know how many seats they sold. I heard it was like 3,000 seats in the Worcester Centrum, which isn't really that big. Yeah, and the year before, I think they had 7,000 in there when they came the year before. So they are losing a lot of interest. And Knuckles, thoughts on the demise of AEW right now?
Well, you know, anytime you mention the NWA, I have to point behind my shoulder here to the this side, the other side, the NWA World Tag Team title, which I won in the 1990s. So I'm as old school as anyone gets. I think AEW barely has a pulse right now. They're just, but I think they can turn it around. I think they can come back from, like, you know, a lot, all wrestling companies make mistakes along the way. You know, they have Samoa Joe, Will Ospreay, you know, Bryan Danielson, the other Blackpool Combat Club guys. All those guys are like, you know, are top-notch wrestlers. They have some decent women wrestlers too. You know, I really like Mariah May and Toni Storm, what she's doing. But this is just my opinion. I think that Tony Khan needs to let someone else book it. He needs to have someone with wrestling background come in, someone that really knows what they're doing, and let them run with it for a little while, because what he's doing right now is clearly not working. And it's the 3,000 people in the arena and the people that are going to watch TV every week are going to keep watching no matter what crap is thrown out there. But it's you know, Samoa Joe is a very, very believable champion, and Swerve Strickland is awesome. And they have, I even like his friend that does the dance, the Prince. I mean, it's just
Prince.
Yeah, it's just, it's sometimes you watch it, it's like, what are they doing right now? And I think he needs to let some people give him a hand, but I don't know if he's going to. It doesn't seem like he's gone. He has so far, and I don't know if he will moving forward. I think that would correct a lot of things, though.
Yeah, and it just goes to show you how much Cody took the high road and went back home, and whether he said it was to win the belt and finish the story or whatever, there was a reason why he left. He left. He asked to leave. He left. And, you know, don't be surprised if he's the gate with Triple H to be like, this guy could work the schedule, or this guy's would be great and these guys aren't, or this person doesn't fit in here. So don't be surprised if there's some nepotism and favoritism with, you know, with who they pry away from AEW. And one of them that I'd love to see go there is MJF. I think he would be a monster heel for them. If given a free rein on the mic, imagine a confrontation with MJF and The Rock. Just imagine that on a Raw or a SmackDown, with just them doing promos leading up to some kind of match or whatever. And that would be phenomenal, I think, for especially people that have never seen MJF. And he does work really well. That one of my favorite matches from AEW was that chain match he had with CM Punk. I thought that was one of Punk's best matches in AEW. I thought the two of them were really, you know, good adversaries for a story. Thoughts on, speaking of CM Punk, I want to get your thoughts on the recent podcast appearance. Who was it with Tom?
Ariel Helwani.
Yeah, on thoughts on CM Punk's podcast appearance and the AEW showing of the surveillance video. What do you think, Knuckles?
First, I'd like to say something about Cody. I don't understand why Cody got the treatment he did in AEW, because they really wouldn't have been in AEW without him. When it comes to putting everything they have and leaving it in the ring, as we say, he did it every single time he got in the ring. I also would say, as far as like the top 10 workers in wrestling, I wouldn't put him on that list, but I would certainly put him on the list as one of the top 10 personalities. As far as like the airing the footage, I'm a Cody fan, and I was really happy for him that happened. I mean, how could you not like him? Like what? Like, he's never in trouble. He's never doing anything. He's not beating up his wife. He never, you know, he's a good guy. He's sincere. But the as far as that footage with Jungle Boy and CM Punk, I don't know anyone that said that was a really good idea. I'm glad they did that. I don't know anyone that's saying that right now. It was a terrible idea. It did nothing to enhance AEW at all. And it really proved CM Punk is like, I come from an era where if I was new, like Jungle Boy basically is, And CM Punk came up to me. I would say yes, sir, to everything he said, even if I didn't agree with it. I would never get in somebody's face. I would never get to the point where they would want to hit me because I would be doing whatever they asked me to do. In the ring, outside of the ring, if they said carry that bag out to my car, I would do it. And that's those days are gone. People don't do things like that anymore. Mm-hmm. Like Hangman Page. Now, I'm highly affiliated with Handsome Jimmy Valiant and Boogie's Wrestling Camp in Virginia, where Adam Page came from. But he is a douche. I can't believe the way he behaved and the things that he did. And that whole idea that I just said of being respectful to the people that came before you, to not have that inside of you. I mean, and you don't even see him that much anymore. It's kind of like that really hurt him, you know? So I think showing the footage was ridiculous. It was pointless. And if they had somebody that was behind the scenes that knew what they were doing, running the show and booking the shows, even a committee, they would have been like, yeah, we're going to pass on that idea.
Yeah. Jim Cornette on his podcast, which is my favorite podcast to listen to because like-minded individual, I like his stories.
Let him run AEW.
Well, that's where I was going.
Here, here.
Exactly. Originally, they had reached out to him about before it started. Tony Khan had reached out to him about coming in and doing some consulting. This was before they initially got a TV deal and all that stuff. He told them no. He told them why. And he had to sign an NDA that he can't talk about it. So we're starting to see the cracks. I know Jim Cornette's not a Young Bucks fan. He uses some pretty blue language when it comes to talking about some of those guys. And as you see it, from somebody with a really good trained eye and an old school wrestling fan, you agree with him. That it's not about I like what CM Punk had said on the podcast. It's not about how many five-star matches you're having. It's about, like you said about Cody, the charisma, drawing you in, you know, making you want to spend your time or your money to get invested in the story. And whether that WrestleMania 3 has one of the best matches on it, like Ed said, Steamboat and Savage, but they didn't buy tickets for that. People bought tickets to see Hogan beat Andre. Now, and two people that aren't known for their in-ring work. So that's what the whole point is what are you going to spend your money on? What are you going to get emotionally invested in? And it's not five-star matches all the time. If you happen to have one, that's fine. But it's all about the ride, the story. Roman Reigns doesn't have five-star matches. I mean, a lot of times it's, you know, Superman punch and go home or spear and go home. And, you know, he's beaten everybody on that roster pretty much. A lot to talk about with AEW. I don't know. Do you give it another year? Do you see it turning around? Do you see it folding? I mean, Tony Schiavone's face, they showed him after the footage, and it looked like he had the same face. They show captions of 2001 WCW, and he was the same look on his face, like we're doomed. What do you think, Tom?
I think that I totally agree with what Knuckles said. They've got to get somebody else booking because he just – you can't have a fan in there. And that's what he was. It's like he's a fan that had the money where he could buy a promotion, and he's got to let somebody that's done it before and knows the business and can build these storylines and let somebody else do it, because that's what's going to bring the fans back. You can see what's going on with the WWE right now. A lot of fans are coming back in droves, and it's because of the storylines are getting that much better.
Yeah, all the venues are all sold out. They're selling out. The ticket prices for basic seats are like $300 now. It's like, remember when it was $10 to go to the Civic Center? Never mind $300 for somebody in front of you to stand up all night with a sign. So it's definitely the culture has changed. Some good, some bad. Knuckles, thoughts on AEW and the whole CM Punk situation before we move on?
Well, I don't think AEW is going to fold anytime soon. You know, I don't know exactly how much, but they have a lot of money behind them with the Khan family. And I think that 3,000 people, that seems to be the number they hear everywhere they go, that certain type of wrestling fan that is going to be like, WWE sucks no matter what they do. The truth of the matter is there's no comparison between the two. And they shouldn't be throwing shots at WWE. They should just be doing their own thing and not even paying attention to what WWE is doing. That's just my opinion. But I don't think it's going to fold anytime soon. It could just, it could be so much better. And if we're having this conversation, they're having this conversation too, and they're trying to work on fixing it, would be my guess.
Yeah, it always seems like no matter what WWE is doing, they're never worried about who the competition is. It's like they know that they're the Coca-Cola, and they're not worried about Pepsi.
I think their competition is Disney, the NFL, the NBA. It's not other wrestling companies.
Yeah, mm-mm. Yeah, good point. And
excellent point.
Yeah, and when they move to Netflix next year, do you see the content changing at all? What do you guys think? It was just an open question.
Oh,
go ahead. What do you guys, Tom? What do you think?
I think it's already changed. I think what they're going with right now is fine with the. They don't have to get crazy. Jake, don't. It's starting to work again. Don't change it. If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Brad, what do you think?
I mean, people thought the Rock came in to save WrestleMania 40. I think the Rock came in as this, part-time boss of TKO to really usher in this era. Triple H got it so far. Cody Rhodes, the bloodline, everybody got it so far. There's only one man that could come in here and bring blood back to WWE, cuss on TV, on SmackDown. He probably paid those fines out of his own dang pocket, and then he takes off and shoots off to Hollywood to make another movie. Only one man could have done that, and that was The Rock. So when we said The Rock saved WWE, it wasn't WrestleMania. He legit helped usher in this era. So when we get to Netflix, I think what we just got for those 2 or 3 months that we had with The Rock, I think that's going to be the new standard. There's a lot they can't do because it gets edited and they get fined. It gets cut out of regular TV, and they go to Netflix. The gloves come off, and like you said, with the blood and AEW, it's kind of too much sometimes, man. It's like over the top. And the formula they have with WWE and how they use the blood, they use the special tables and ladders and chairs matches, and they go it's reserved for special occasions, and it works. So I think Netflix is going to be a great move, great era for WWE. I can't wait, man. I say bring it on. Let's go.
And you got Netflix?
I don't, but I'm going to. But here's it. Here's the thing. So the thing is like Stephanie got out there on the mic on night two.
Yep.
And she said, "Welcome to the Paul Levesque era."
The new era.
So the new era. So like the thing is like you can tell that they're starting to they're starting to build something here. they're starting to bring in some of that that older talent. That was really, really good on the mic. I mean, because if you really look back, The Rock, Stone Cold, most of the stuff that they did leading into it, those big matches, they never really had a big match on regular TV. It was always to sell the pay-per-view. It was always about telling the story, And so it's nice to see that kind of come back. And Knuckles, you'd probably be the best one to talk about this on how to tell a story because you're the only one here on this whole podcast that's actually walked the walk, and you've done it.
Well, I think you guys are all extremely knowledgeable. I've enjoyed listening to everybody, and I've always enjoyed listening to myself. So I can say that there's a combination of things going on with WWE. First of all, Triple H was obviously in DX. When they go on Netflix, he's going to have a much more open mind to ideas of things. And, none of us have mentioned this yet, and it could be a whole podcast about Vince McMahon not being a part of this anymore. And what's happened is there's a lot of different people that are being allowed to give their opinions, that you never could do that before. I was an extra in a jobber in WWE for over 2 years, and you just did exactly what you were told. You never offered any opinions, and it's changing now. And I look at the people that were just mentioned, all the legends, the Hall of Famers that were just mentioned. But what about the Gunthers and the Braun Breakers? And I'm going to put her in this category because I honestly believe she belongs there. Tiffany Stratton. This girl is fucking awesome. She is on her
way. So good.
a megastar. The way she wrestles, she is tough, and she is very, very, very easy to look at. Like, so you got these people that are coming up, and you got these people that have been there all along, and you got the guys that are still kind of in the middle. Like, they're, you know, there's nothing but – I think that they can do no wrong right now. So when they go to Netflix, there's probably going to be some – you know, things that are going to be like, oh, we probably shouldn't have done that, just like they did with the CM Punk footage in AEW. And they're going to be like, let's do that again the next week. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, it's kind of like, I'm not sure which one of you said it, but, you know, the gloves are coming off when they go on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And us, the winners are us as the wrestling fans. Because yep. I was a fan before I was a wrestler, and I'm a fan again. I have never apologized for being a wrestling fan. I've been defending it my whole life, like a lot of people have. And I think the best is right around the corner. I mean, what about Braun Breaker versus Gunther? What's that going to be like?
Going to be good.
Braun Breaker is he's unbelievable. How, like, watching him just run the ropes, he's just so fast. He's just unbelievable.
He moved the ring. He hit the rope so hard, it moved the ring. And I'm waiting for him to have his moment and on, like, Raw or where'd he go? SmackDown? I don't remember. But right now they just keep giving him these quick, like, 2-3 minute matches. But when Braun Breaker can actually, like, get a legit opponent, it's gonna be epic, man.
Hey Chris, thoughts on Raw going to Netflix?
Yeah, bring it on, you know. No holes barred, right? If you can take advantage of dropping some swears, showing some extra skin, whatever it is, let's see it. I think that's just going to get people more excited about it, bring more fans in. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a little bit more blood when we go to Netflix. And, you know, that's my hope with the storytelling.
More Tiffy Stratton on Netflix. That's
probably
my hope.
Probably. You never know. Let's pause. Tom, let's do some shitty picks, and then we'll get right back into it.
Okay. Here we go. Tom Shitty Picks is brought to you by Brock Street Brewing Company, which is located at 244 Brock Street South in Whitby, Ontario. The brewery is home to a banquet hall, an on-site restaurant, and a members-only lounge. Everything they brew is done in-house, including their sours, lagers, and vodka soda. They have something for everyone, so if you're in the Whitby area, go check them out and tell them the 1973 podcast sent you. All right. This past week, my pick is kind of incomplete because I picked Nathan Eovaldi, and he's got two starts. He's got the second start tomorrow, so he's basing this on one start so far. He got 12 points in the league I'm in. He had, I think, 8 strikeouts, gave up 2 runs, so I think it's going to end up being a good pick. This coming week, I'm going with another pitcher. I'm going with the Philadelphia Phillies, Aaron Nola. He's got 2 games this week against Colorado and the White Sox. Mm. The Colorado's, they're second in the league, in the National League, with strikeouts as a team. They struck out 149 times. And I think that the White Sox right now, they've got so many injuries and they're so bad. They're like a double-A team, triple-A team. So I think Nola could easily rock up 25, 30 points for the week.
Easily.
So a little sports talk in the middle of there. Pay some bills with Brock Street. We'll get right back into it. I got a question for Knuckles. Oh, Ed, go ahead. Quick.
I was gonna ask Knuckles question first.
Go ahead.
I want to kick it around to everybody else.
Yeah.
What did he think about how Cody finished it in the ring at the end, and how that kind of brought it, kind of like finished the story with Cody and that type of thing, a lot like what his dad used to do?
I thought it was great. I thought everything about that match, everything about when him and his wife were in AEW, I mean, they were just treated so horribly. Brandi was just like, you know, I don't think she was ever going to be on TV again. They're perfect together, those two, and they were great. It was, you know, what was great about all of it with his mom and with his wife and with his friends. It was real. The whole thing was real.
Now, do you think that Bruce Pritchard being there is still the guy that needs to go, because he's the only guy left that was like one of Vince's guys? Do you think do you think he'll conform to how it is now? What do you think, Knuckles?
Well, when I was wrestling, you know, in WWF matches back in those days, I remember I would be like at the gorilla position and it was time for me to go. And I'd start walking out to the ring and Bruce Prichard would say, come back, come back. And I come back and he goes, I'm just kidding. So that guy always fucked with me. So it would be easy for me to, it would be easy for me to say, yeah, get rid of him. But from what I can only go by the final product that I'm seeing on TV. And I'm thinking, whatever team they have going, like, whoever thought that wrestling would be without Vince? And you know, without getting into all the stuff, all the allegations and all the stuff, most of it's probably true. You know, a guy in his mid-80s needed to, like, step away. Like, if, you know, if the NBA commissioner or the MLB commissioner was in his mid-80s, it would just be time to, for some. So what's happening is, even if that didn't happen, I think it was a good time for him to step down. And it's, you know, the way it happened is too bad because, if he's not a Hall of Famer, I don't know who is. But as far as Bruce Prichard goes, it seems to me like it would be hard to find someone with more knowledge of the last 30 years in wrestling than Bruce Prichard, you know. And I think the ones that needed to go were probably, you know, Johnny Ace and Laurinaitis and Vince, and they're gone.
Yeah, and Kevin Dunn, too, because if you look at the production – he's been there since that, you know, Coliseum home video days. And if you look at what they're doing with the UFC style production, with even the camera work for the, when they zoom in on each individual wrestler in the main event, it's pretty cool how they have that handheld camera that kind of zooms in and it's kind of almost 3D. I don't know if you guys noticed that, like during WrestleMania, that it was a different kind of high def. I don't know what it was, but it pretty cool the way they shoot it. Tom, thoughts on, like Ed was saying, about how the story got finished?
And just to go off of what Knuckle said a while ago about Cody Rhodes and him being a good guy, I just loved how we had Brody Lee's son in the ring with him after he won the belt. When everybody went in the ring, Brody Lee's son was there with him. So I just, he just really does seem like he's a very grounded person. He's not really, doesn't seem like he's got a lot of attitude or ego.
Chris, how do you think your views on Cody finishing the story?
Yeah, no, it was great. And the best part about it, I think, how you could see that everybody was behind him. Everybody wanted to see this happen. Everybody was so emotionally invested. Samantha Irvin, the ring announcer from New Bedford, right? She went to New Bedford High, by the way.
Yeah.
Couldn't even get it out. Like, she was like just bawling. It was amazing to, you know, it was cool. It was great. All around awesome.
Brad has a Cody Rhodes story. I don't know if he wants to share it about the weight belt from a couple weeks ago, right, Brad, when he went to Raw?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He came down and is, you know, every episode he comes out and grabs a kid and hugs him and you know, kind of puts that kid, makes that kid's day and gets him on TV. But anyway, that particular Raw in New Orleans, he came and hugged my son and got Lucas on TV. It was this huge deal. That's why we were so emotionally invested. You know, Lucas cried a little bit, you know, when Cody won. Like, you couldn't believe it. This is his second WrestleMania he's ever watched. You know, the first one Cody lost and he was devastated. This is what Cody won, and he was overcome with emotion. But I think Samantha Irvin was the co-MVP of this WrestleMania. I've watched that clip back of her calling it at least 100 times, and you get teary eyed and cry two tears in a bucket every time, man. But I liked how we pulled everybody out on the ring. I think Seth Rollins was the number one MVP. You know, if Samantha Irvin was my co MVP, Seth was my MVP. This will be historically one of the best matches of his career. One of the best WrestleManias, one of the best premium live events of his career. He laid it all out. Got jabbed in the eye somehow. His eye was so swollen and jacked up by the end. And this guy came out, and now he's taking like 2 or 3 months off, you know, for much needed rest. But I was getting kind of like upset with Cody in the celebration. I was like, why aren't you thanking Seth Rollins? Like, this whole night, this whole weekend was because of him. And then he walks over and, you know, stops him as he's hobbling off the out of the arena, and he shakes his hand, and that's when it got me right there. That's when I, waterworks, man.
The
Seth Rollins, man.
Maybe they're leading to something. You never know. Long-term storytelling, right? You never know.
Can I What if when Seth, look, not Seth, when Cody Rhodes left WWE originally, was this not just the longest? Like you told me once, Andy, a long time ago, one of our early episodes, you said long-term storytelling is how they make this business, right? And I was like, yeah, but how long? How long is too long? What if when Cody left, the creatives were like, look, man, you're going to leave WWE. You're undesirable. You're going to go independent. You're going to join AEW. You're going to build it up. Then you're going to leave. You're going to come back. Then we're going to work this in for 2 or 3 years and have you take down the, you know, whatever's going. What if this was just the longest work ever? Because it was too good.
I think it's wishful thinking. I think he was miserable there with what they had for him with the Stephen Amell thing and the Stardust.
Oh, the Stardust thing for sure. Yeah.
And especially where the Stardust thing, the name Stardust was Dusty's nickname for a little while there from the late 70s to the early 80s. And I think him being so emotionally invested in the family, even with the brother, him leaving and reinventing himself, just totally like he was a heel for a while. And we had driven down to Connecticut to see him and Kurt Angle fight in a cage. And I got to meet him. And the first thing I said to him is, I'm such a big fan of your father. And he looks at me and he's like, you met my father? I said, yeah. I said, he was my favorite wrestler growing up, babyface. He goes, when'd you meet him? I said, oh, I met him in New York right before he passed away. He goes, how was he, grumpy? I said, well, he wasn't grumpy, but there were two kids in front of me that had like two suitcases full of 8x10s. And they were just throwing them in front of him. And he was just signing them. And we made eye contact. And I was like, I got one thing. I've been waiting 40 years to meet you. And when I finally got to meet him, it wasn't as well as I wish it would have been. And that's what I explained to him. And he talked to me for like 10 minutes. And it was like having a conversation on the podcast. He was asking me always the same thing. When did you start watching wrestling? I started watching in the late 70s. Was it WWF? I said, yep, it was WWF. Then I told him how when I got cable, I started watching Georgia Championship Wrestling. And we talked for like 10, 15 minutes. And it was like talking to one of your buddies, just catching up. Mm-hmm. He was like super cool. And he seems like that still. So hopefully, you know, hopefully he has the belt for a little bit of a run. But for me, the money's not in a babyface champion. It's always in the heel with the chase. So I don't know. Does he get screwed right away? Do they give him it till SummerSlam? What are your thoughts on that, Knuckles? Do you think he'll have a long run?
Well, first of all, I didn't know Samantha Irvin was from New Bedford High School. So big pop, New Bedford, Mass. Big pop for that. You have so many people from this area that are like so important there, like Triple H and Matt Bloom, the head trainer at the Performance Center, is Akilah Kowalski guy. And that's pretty cool. I think they're going to let Cody run with it for a while. I would think so. I don't see, like, you know, you don't go through all this and then have him drop the belt to somebody. There's no shortage of challenges for him. But I think, you know, they're already thinking about what his match would be at WrestleMania with The Rock. I think that's probably, you know, these things are a year in advance now. It's not, you know, there was a time where you could go to a house show and a belt would change hands. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Boston guy and Tito Santana and Randy Savage wasn't even televised.
Perfect example.
Yeah, yeah. Ed, do you think he's going to have a long title reign?
I would like to see that. I mean, I think that would be a lot of fun. Because Dusty never had big runs.
No.
It would always be, you know, he'd either drop it right back to Flair or something like that, you know. It would be nice to see Cody kind of run with that a little bit, you know. Especially knowing what his last match was in AEW, which was that table match where he lit it on fire and everything like that. I mean, you know, that's your last match and you're going out and you're giving a hell of a pop. And then now here you are, you know. Your dad could never make it happen. And a lot of that, I think, going back to what Knuckles said, you know, that was Vince's choice because, I mean, he had Dusty dressed up in, you know, black tights and a black top with big yellow circles on it, you know?
Yeah, that's a story in itself. Sapphire, you know, the whole deal.
You know, and so, like, my thing about it is just that, you know, you do that to somebody that really, like, you know, Dusty had such charisma on the mic, and I mean, just – you know, I mean, and so to see this happen for Cody, it just, I guess it just really turns out nice for him. And I hope he has a good run.
I'm going to pause this and I'm going to throw something else in the mix. Do they get Dustin to come in? He was there. Him and Ricky Starks were there. They didn't use him.
He was there. Yep.
He was there, but they didn't do nothing with him. But I would love to see his contract kind of fizzle out and then bring him in, even if it's like his manager or like his, you know, just enforcer type thing, and then just come out with him and not as Gold Dust, not with a half painted face, just Dustin Rhodes. That's how we want to see him. No more Gold Dust, no more goofy shit like that. That I'd like to see him connect that at the end of Dustin's career. I don't know. Thoughts, Chris? What do you think?
I'm not sure about bringing in Dustin Rhodes and all, but as far as the run, I don't see it being that long, unfortunately. I don't know if he can – I mean, he's a good guy, you know, huge fan base too. Everybody likes Cody Rhodes. I just don't see him carrying it for a long time with all these big monstrous dudes around, and I feel like they always have to have this, you know, Brock Lesnar type carrying the belt for you know, months and months. So we'll see how it goes.
Thomas, what's your take?
I think he's going to hold it for a while. I don't think it'll be as long as Roman Reigns, but I think I totally agree with Knuckles. They have so many feuds they can go with. I'd like to see if he's healthy enough with his back. They've already got the Orton history with Orton and Cody from years ago, where they could bring that up if Orton's healthy enough. That's the big key, because his back is a big question mark.
Brad, what do you think?
Andy, I hate that me and you agree so much on wrestling stuff. He's had the belt for a week, and I'm already bored. And I'm the biggest Cody Rhodes fan. This Raw and the promos don't hit the same now that he's the champ. And I want him to have a run. I don't want anybody to have as long a run as Roman Reigns had. Like that, to me, it gets lost in the sauce. It's too long. It gets boring. And long-term storytelling and all, that's too long, man. But I think he'll have it for a little bit because he earned it. Like, they put this man through some shit when he came back to WWE. Good like point. It was not, he was not just handed this belt. He freaking earned it, man. But so I think he'll hold it for a while. It's not going to be as long as Reigns. And I like that Tama Tonga is now in WWE, and this whole bloodline being fractured thing. I think there's going to be more bloodline storytelling coming down, which why it makes sense to bring in Dustin, because Cody had to form the Avengers to bring down the bloodline. He's going to have to bring in, you know, Dustin, you know, or somebody. And the Undertaker was only at WrestleMania because they couldn't finalize the deal with Stone Cold. So I think Stone Cold maybe might be on the table to come in and beef with The Rock a little bit. So I think that I don't think he's going to hold it for that long. You know, I'm already bored. I'm already ready for the next. That made me fickle. I wanted him to win it, and now I'm like, this is kind of boring. Let's move on to the next.
He gave his son a hug. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
What a jerk. What a heel.
I know.
What a heel.
I know.
Yeah, we love heels. Heels pay the bills.
Hey, listen, do you know who Tama Tonga's father is?
Haiku. Or yeah, how do you say it? Haiku? They say it.
Yep. Ming.
Yep. Haiku. King Haiku. And Jacob Fatu is coming too. And he's an absolute beast. Have you ever seen that guy?
Yeah. Yep. Gigantic.
Ooh. Wow. And moves really well for a big man. Like, not so much like Ed, but moves well for a big man.
Can I chime in on Dustin, please?
Absolutely.
I think AEW, you can do whatever you want in wrestling. Behind the scenes, you can do whatever you want. And I think they really missed the boat not putting the belt on Dustin Wednesday night. All they had to do was change the stipulation. This is a title match. Have Swerve beat down Joe like he did, and then that would be the emphasis for him to win the belt. And then Swerve could win the belt from Joe if that's the direction they're going in. But I think if to bring Dustin to the WWE would be phenomenal at his age and everything that he's done. But I would be shocked if they didn't bring him back as Gold Dust and have Marlena with him. I think that's what they would probably do, just because it would be a temporary thing. And that they, when they bring their characters back, I mean, you know, if I don't know about any of you, but I was sitting there wondering, is Dean Ambrose going to come out when the Shield music hit? And because, you know, John Moxley is such a tool bag that he actually thinks he's in a better position than being in the WWE in that mix, where he is right now wrestling guys that I've never even heard of half the time. But, you know, like, they would not bring him back as John Moxley. They don't bring anybody back as, you know, they brought, you know, Alondra Blaze. You know, Medusa is Medusa. There is no two ways about it. But they called her a lot. You know, that's just what they do. So, and I think people would go crazy if Goldust walked through the curtain, even though I wouldn't.
Right. Yeah, I'm a natural Dustin Rhodes fan. If I like him just like that, looking like the family, not looking like a, you know, it's 2024, you know, so.
I have a unique perspective on all of this. These people we're talking about, because I was in the locker room with some of them, and Dustin Rhodes is a super nice guy. Like, there were certain people that you just didn't talk to. Like Stone Cold, maybe said, "Hey, what's up to me?" one time in 2 years. You know, it's just the way it was. But Dustin, the Hardys, Chris Jericho, Mark Henry, these guys were all like, no, Cactus Jack. Well, I wrestle Cactus Jack, so they know you by, you know, they'll call you by name and do you need anything? Is everything okay? You know, like, and Dustin is a great dude, man. He was just super nice to you know, to the lower level wrestlers.
So it runs in the family.
Precisely.
So let's talk about one thing I want to ask Knuckles about, Paul Heyman going into the Hall of Fame. I know that there was some heat with Tony Rumble and him, but your thoughts, is Paul Heyman the greatest wrestling manager of all time?
I would make an argument for, that's a tough question to answer. Like Bobby Heenan, Cornette, JJ Dillon. There's a lot of great managers, but his speech was the greatest speech. And not because he used all that like crazy language. It was just the way he talked to his children, the way he brought up ECW and brought the old gear out, and everything about his, you know, there's been some really great Hall of Fame speeches, but, you know, who's going to ever top that?
Yeah. The Bull Nakano speech wasn't that great. How about the Thunderbolt Patterson speech? Woo-wee!
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, somebody get this guy off the stage. I mean, I know how Thunderbolt Patterson is. I mean, I remember him. Mm. I mean, he was on Georgia Wrestling when I was a kid, and he was even in TBS Wrestling when they bought it, and they would have him come in, and I'd be watching him going, "Oh my God, what is this guy saying?" I mean, I know Jimmy Valiant wasn't known for cutting these great promos, but he was funny. It was like, Thunderbolt Patterson was like, if I only had time, if I only had, like, they put him on and like cut the camera off on him. It just, I didn't know what he was doing, or if they just wheeled him out there, literally wheeled him out there.
What you said about the greatest managers of all time, my Mount Rushmore, because this is precious airtime that I get to talk with you guys. I'm going to go with Gary Hart. I'm going to go with Captain Louis Albano. I'm going to go with Paulie Dangerously and Bobby Heenan.
There you go. I knew you were going to put Bobby Heenan on there. You could also
come with four more right after that. It's really hard to do that in wrestling or baseball or any sport, you know?
I think the art of the manager/valet is lost, and I would love to see some of these attractive females that aren't really cut out for wrestling become more of the sensational Sherrys of a new generation, where you don't get sick of them because they can't really wrestle, but they are really good at getting that heat for whoever they're with. I think that's definitely a lost art. I don't know if you agree, valets versus, you know, women wrestlers these days. Thoughts on that, Knuckles?
I agree with you. And you know what? There's an argument for Sherry being on that Mount Rushmore, too.
I think Sherry's the greatest woman's manager of all time. I mean, I used to be as a young boy, I was a mock for Nancy Sullivan when nobody knew who she was, when she was the Fallen Angel. Big Kevin Sullivan fan from back then, not Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan, not Goofy Kevin Sullivan, but 1980s Kevin Sullivan, Prince of Darkness, Fallen Angel, Mark Lewin, big fan. One of the most underrated heels of all time, probably my favorite heel gimmick of all time. There would be no Undertaker without the Kevin Sullivan gimmick. That's just my opinion. So I don't know where I was going with that, but let's talk.
I was worried. Saturday. You said when I was a young boy, and I was like, oh my goodness, where's it going?
We're going to segue away from that. So back to the ring, Chris Colt. Tom, did you watch it? You didn't
watch it. Okay.
Let's bring this back to true north. Chris, take it away. Dark Side of the Ring this week.
Yeah. Where do you begin with this unique motherfucker? Holy shit. This guy was amazing. I wished it was more like real footage. Like the time that he was wrestling the cage match and he took the LSD and there was spiders climbing into the cage and he like jumped out, just started beating up fans and shit. Where was the video? That's all I kept saying. I'm like, they're really not going to show video of this? I couldn't believe it. Dude was a character. So many stories. It was probably, and I didn't even know who he was until I watched this episode today. Never heard of Chris Cole. Okay, obviously, born in 1987. No idea. Guy was amazing, clearly. It was probably one of my best, favorite Dark Side of the Ring episodes. I've seen every single one from season one till now. That was unbelievable. It was great.
Ed, did you watch it?
I did. I was just shocked and amazed. I could not believe it. It was one of those things where I was like,
"You're like, I've seen those videos."
What's that?
You're like, "I've seen those videos." That's where I know that guy from.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever, dude. Shut up.
Yeah. Whatever.
Whatever, dude. What? No, but I mean, I would agree with. Shut up, dude. You're not even funny today. All right, I'm done.
Come on, you got to know sketch.
Come on, Brad. Take us home.
Look, Let me rephrase. I watched Dark Side of the Ring, to be clear as day. Wow. I did hit the pause button when old boy was being interviewed and he said, I can't even say it. He said, wrestling used to be softcore porn for the gays. I was like, God, don't fucking say it, buddy. That was a wild ride. Dark Side of the Ring, that was wild, man. Like that, let's be honest, like when it came to wrestling, the guy, he was on it. Like he, again, like Chris said, is a little before my time, but the guy was professional. He was into it. He, brutal as shit though. Like my God, the pain and the stuff he put himself through for wrestling. Definitely appreciate that. But if you guys watch, True Crime Podcast, he also kind of had like all the ingredients for serial killer, like rough childhood upbringing, not a good relationship with his mom and dad, maybe abused along the way, a sadist, a masochist, and homosexual. Those were all the ingredients for serial killing. So I'm just going to throw that out there with my little conspiracy theories. Wild episode, though, man. Wild episode.
So, Knuckles, any thoughts on Chris Cole as a whole? I don't know if you know a lot about him, if you ever had any cross paths with him or anything like that.
Well, I'm 60 years old, I'm straight, and I love women. And I found the episode to be uncomfortable to watch because I'm old school, man. I'm old school. Like, you know, I try to keep up with everything. I don't have pronouns. I don't, you know, I'm just not from that era. But I will say that I had also never heard of Chris Cole. But who I had heard of and know very well is Tom Burke, the guy that was the wrestling historian that was on the show, and he was talking about Chris Cole. And I didn't get a chance to, because if I had known we were going to talk about this, I would have called Tom, because he lives down in Springfield, Mass, and he's a wrestling historian that has more memorabilia and knows everything about wrestling. And he was featured on the show. They interviewed him several times about this guy, Chris Cole, and he had handwritten letters from him and everything. As far as an in-ring performer, he was really good. He was definitely ahead of his time. I think I saw him do like a leg drop off the top in one, and he did an elbow off the top like Macho Man used to do. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that he was into, I'm all set with, man.
Good point. Well-rounded. I mean,
You mean, Knuckles, you didn't come down to the ring with safety pins on your face?
Nope. And the videos that he was making after, and the guy that was talking about what Hulk Hogan meant to the gay community. Like, I'm not if it's okay to be like talking about whatever you want, then I'm fucking proud to be straight.
Yeah.
And I like girls, you know, like a lot of that stuff. Like, I don't really know what to say. Like, I've never had that kind of mindset.
Yeah.
Never crossed my mind until they said it on the dark side.
Yeah, to know that the Cow Palace was filled with gay guys that were there to see Hulk Hogan, that was news to me. But you know something? Yeah. I guess it makes sense. And I do, and I could see how I knew a lot of people that were like really creepy dudes in the wrestling business, especially on the independent scene. Like, you know, guys that would we can say whatever we want on this show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I had a guy walk up to me in a locker room one time, and he said, "Wow, that was a really good match. I'd really like to see your cock and balls." I'm not gonna mention his name, but I looked at him and I said, well, that definitely is not gonna happen. You know, wrestling is gonna attract a lot of different types of people.
Yeah.
Cancel me if you will.
No, not you guys.
Yeah.
It's things that you can't unsee. Like when you hear it presented like that from somebody that comes from that background, whoever that guy was, the filmmaker.
What a creep.
Yeah, it does. He was. It's something that you can't, once it's presented like that, you cannot shut it off. It's like, oh my God. It's like, is that a thing, or is that just trolling for like a soundbite? I don't know. We've been to a lot of wrestling shows over the years, like different eras in my life. And I never said, hey, look at that big section over there. It looks like, the Village People are in that section. It
never happened at the Fall River Armory, did it?
No.
Nor Waltham either did it in.
It was always like, what I will say is there's always been fathers and sons and small kids.
Yep.
But it seems like the families have changed. It was always like you would see mother, father, and the kids. You would see, but you start to see less of the girls that you used to see, like that I don't know, 18 to 40 demographic, if you know, single girls and things like that. It seems like that's lost with a modern day wrestling. You don't have the last time you really saw it was probably in the Attitude Era when it was like college friendly and things like that. But that, I think wrestling could use a little bit of that back, a little bit of the sex appeal to draw the younger girls to come to the matches. Thoughts on that?
Totally agree with you.
I didn't know if Knuckles wanted to weigh in on the demographic of families versus, you know, single ladies versus, you know, a group of guys. It's changed a lot.
Well, when I was wrestling, there were lots of chicks in the crowd because it was during the whole Attitude Era and a little before and a little after. But I was sitting here thinking, I bet if Hulk Hogan was a god to the gay community, I bet the Road Warriors, when they were all decked out in leather, were they looked like the Village People.
Right.
They looked like the Village People that could pressure over their heads.
It's funny because one of the toughest guys in wrestling played a gay character, and he wasn't even gay, Exotic Adrian Street. He was like one of the most flamboyant characters that drew heat from that. I'm not saying that I'm gay, but I'm giving you the impression to think that he was, with Miss Linda and the whole thing. But behind the scenes, he was uber tough. And, it's just it, I don't know what people are drawn to it for, but I never thought that that was ever a thing until it was brought up in Dockside. I don't know if you guys felt the same way.
Well, if you put the whole thing as a pie, that's just one slice of the pie. Then there's guys, then there's girls, then there's families, then there's kids, then there's grandparents, and I mean, it was just part of it. It was a part of it that I think it was good. I mean, it was okay that they brought it out. It just was maybe the first time I'd ever been heard it put that way by such a creepy guy.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of. And then it's funny because if you watch it. He's wrestling a guy. I'll explain it like this. He's wrestling a guy in a mask. And somebody says to him, was that you under the mask? And he goes, okay, that was me. And then you're like, oh, even worse. I thought he was just the guy holding the camera.
And let's talk about Tiffany Stratton again.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah. Let's talk about Tiffany Stratton.
Hey, bring it back if home. You watched SmackDown this past Friday, we almost had a wardrobe mishap on TV, fellas, with Tiffy Stratton.
Well, there's a lot of stuff you gotta tape up, you know. Yeah. That.
Well, she didn't tape up, and she rolled around on the mat and came up, and I was like, whoa, "Hold up!" And then she, you know, it was pretty entertaining. But she, like Knuckles said though, she's also an incredible athlete. Like she's just fun to watch, man.
Tom, want to add on the Tiffany Stratton? One of your favorites?
I think she's a total package. I think she's the next big thing for women.
Yeah, she
I
is.
Mean, she's going to be in a bad time because Jay Cargill is going to get pushed right now. So it's going to be tough for her to, unless she challenges Bayley, which could happen because Bayley's a face now, but it'll be tough for her. But I think she is a total package.
Yeah, there's another one that we thought that we totally forgot about when we were talking about the AEW, them stealing Jay Cargill away.
Yep.
You know, she was undefeated there. She only lost the last match that she had. She had that big run where she was like 60 something and 0, and she was the first inaugural TBS champion, right? Yep. And she lost that one match and went off to WWE, and it's like she never existed in AEW.
Well, the thing about Jade Cargill is I think Tiffany Stratton is much better than her because Jade doesn't have timing for some reason. Her timing is off on everything that she does. Some people get out of bed in the morning and they're in time. Tiffany Stratton has natural timing for wrestling, and I bet you'll see those two in a big feud at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing with Jade when she came over and they really slow rolled her her debut. Like she came out in the Royal Rumble. She was in the Elimination Chamber match down in Perth when they went to Australia. But they really slow rolled her because what Knuckles just said, like her timing, she's really off in the ring. Her mic skills aren't all that. Tiffy Stratton, on the other hand, was a gymnast. She's an athlete. Her mic skills are incredible for being so young in the business. Like she got fast tracked through NXT straight to the main roster. I would love to see that feud and take down Bayley, and then somebody eventually go take down Rhea Ripley.
She's relaxed. Tiffany Stratton is relaxed in the ring. Yep. That's the word.
Complete natural at it. 100%.
So, why don't we start winding down the episode, Tom? You want to do the album of the week, and then we can do some shout-outs, and then we'll wrap this bad boy up.
All righty. Time to pay some bills. This week's album of the week is brought to you by Purchase Street Records, located at 53 Pope's Island, Unit 2, New Bedford, Mass. You can also visit them online at purchasestrecords.com or on their Facebook page. Purchase Street Records is Southern New England's largest independent record store. And just another reminder that I believe it's in 1 week, is National Record Day, Record Store Day. Roger's got to have a huge compliment. Like I think he said 3,000 albums outside that are going to be on discount. So go check them out.
So we're going to wind it down. We're going to do some shout outs. I'll start off this week. I want to remind, I said this to Ed earlier in the day, our online store with all the swag, free shipping this weekend. If anybody buys anything, it ships for free. So go on, buy something, buy a hat, buy a shirt, buy some shit, do whatever you need to do. Got a birthday, a bar mitzvah, buy something. Stop being cheap. Brad, what do you got?
I don't have any shout outs. I was going to shout out Ed because I went by the store the other day, buddy, and it was sad. It was not the same. Miss you, buddy. Thanks, but I know you're doing big things. Shout out to Ed. Keep doing big things, buddy.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I'm going to kick it to my buddy, Chris, who's the silent but violent member of the group. Let's go.
Ooh, silent but violent.
I got no shout outs this week. This was a very lackluster week for me. Work was a pain in the ass. So, you know, I've been just trying to catch up this weekend on sleep and, you know, the whole third shift deal. So I'm just trying to reel it all in.
We're going to give you what I do. Get your sleep at work. Big virtual hug from the podcast.
Thank you.
Thomas, shout out this week.
Not much of a shout out, but I'm going to say Scotty. He always says we don't talk about the Celtics. Well, they got 63 wins now. They won last night with their top six guys sitting on the bench, and they still won by 34 points against the Charlotte Hornets. So there's your basketball, Scotty.
Scotty too hotty. The Dallas Mavs will win the NBA Finals Championship. Calling it.
Knuckles, before we get to Ed, I'm going to let Ed close out the show this week, but I want to thank you for coming on. Do you have any shout outs? All the guys at work, everybody,
the book. Of course I do. I do have shout out. All this talk about New Bedford, I'd like to shout out to the late, great Nightman Nick Steele, my first tag team partner who passed away a few years ago. Tremendous wrestler. I'd also like to plug my book, Waking Up from the Wrestling Ring to the Yoga Mat, which you can find on Amazon. And in the words of the late, great Tony Rumble, I'm Boston born and Boston bad, and I'll be Boston bad till I'm Boston dead.
Ed, you got to follow that to sign us off.
Man, I can't. It's hard to follow that. First and foremost, I'd like to make I'm glad that all of my people in Louisiana made it out safe with the big storm that went through Slidell. That's where my old store used to be. And last but certainly not least, Knuckles, thank you very much for being so gracious with your time. We greatly appreciate it. Man, it's so nice to have somebody that comes on that actually, you walked the walk, you did it. For myself, for Andy, and for Tom, Brad, and Chris, we can't thank you enough. It really was awesome. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for coming on. We will have you on again. And
anytime.
Thanks, guys. It was great being here with you tonight.
I think we should make a pact with Knuckles that maybe after a pay-per-view, maybe we can have him come on and talk about the pay-per-view, and we can, you know, get a deep dive after a pay-per-view so it doesn't get very monotonous, and we can have some weeks to kind of build for it. So something to think about. Maybe let us know in the comments if you want to see Knuckles back. We want him back. Maybe we'll have him
buy
back.
His book.
Buy a book. Buy some stuff.
Buy his book.
All right. We'll talk to everybody next week. Thanks for showing up.